Lawmaster Podcast, episode 10, with Paul and Barry.
Hello, everyone, and today's episode is one of my favourites. I've been waiting for this one. Episode 10, Dwarves, Little Legs, Big Guns.
Big Guns. So this was requested by Roscoe, along with a few others. So this is for you, Mr. Roscoe.
Indeed, but we would have talked about them sooner or later anyway, so it's not so much of a hardship.
Okay. Apologies first, because we didn't do a cast last week. It was half term, which is problematic, and we also had lots of other stuff on, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Indeed.
Okay. So, Paul, tell us what you've been doing, man.
Okay, so what have I been
doing? Tell us about your wins.
Yeah, I've got some wins. Basically, since you've last recorded, and today is Tuesday the 23rd in the morning, I've played two people. I've played Rodders with Dwarves against his Dark Elves, so he's learning the game. He had played a long time
ago. Yeah, he had played.
So it wasn't new to him. And he used Dark Elves, and I got a good win there. It was
Does he use Dark Elf tokens?
He was using a token army. He was using, it was like 10-6 or something. So, yeah, close game, but a win to me.
Well, did they feel good to play? Are they good
on Dark Elves? Yeah. Oh, yeah, very good. Certainly up there with High Elves. Definitely. As long as you don't roll any blunders for your characters early on, then they're very strong.
Okay.
I also played a game against Phil Elliott, teaching him a game. He used High Elves, a mixture of tokens and models he's gotten, and I was using Dwarves again. I got this now, so it's a teaching game. I'm teaching him how to play. He's using High Elves, and I only just win. It was like, what? Like, this shows how good High Elves are and how forgiving they are.
Is that down to the Silver Elms and the Leadership 10?
It helps. That is good.
Because I don't imagine the Bolt Throwers did much.
He'd be like an example of like interview a new player who's got no 15-year past experience. Because like he was like, oh, I'm going to use High Elves and I want to use a Dragon Rider because it looks cool. And it's like, okay.
Tournament list or yeah. Like or full
authentic.
300 points.
Yeah.
300 points, okay.
And I was just like, when we'd done the High Elf podcast one, we were like, never take this thing. He did. It didn't do a lot, but that's the thing.
With that 300-point handicap.
And the new player syndrome of like, hasn't learned the game, taught the game, still gave me a run for my money. It's like, oh my God, High Elves are good. But that's what they are. I mean, it's, you know, the classic Dwarf High Elf match up there. That was quite fun. But yeah, so
anyway, that's what High Elves are tier one, I guess.
Yeah. Also, away from Warmaster, I've been at SmogCon. So should we talk about SmogCon now?
Why not?
Because have you got a Warmaster game to report?
I can talk about the one game I had. I played against Nick. Nick is our resident Tomb Kings player. He's got a lovely Tomb Kings painted army. He's got a lovely Tomb King themed board that won your event for nice board.
It's beautiful.
It is fantastic. Mm. With absolute, I'm trying not to swear, but an absolute mountain, a mass of fortified scenery, like ridiculous amounts of fortified scenery. So
yeah, it's all from a website called Hovels, and they haven't got a big range, but they do have a very good Egyptian range. Huge pyramids, like proper scaled pyramids to the game, and like Egyptian-style buildings, which you put as area terrain as fortified. It, honestly, on a desert mat, the table looks fantastic.
Okay, so I was using Nippon, which I'll talk about my Nippon list and I'll post it up. This is the kind of tournament Nippon list. So it's not a list I chop and change because I know I'm playing against Tomb Kings or Dwarves. This is the list. This is an all-comers list. So even though Tomb Kings infantry are crap, as face facts, they are poor, piss poor. With the amount of fortified terrain that's around, trying to hit a skeleton on a 6-up is nothing.
It's just as hard as trying to hit a dwarf.
So you just don't bother. So he set up a couple of brigades in this fortified terrain and just ignored them. And what the game came down to, as Tomb Kings, he's got like break 14, as you'd expect. I got two units of Ronin into two of his brigades. In fact, one went into his skull chuckers and ate both of those because they don't get a reaction. They don't get to shoot, they just die. So the Skullchuckers died, and then that unit of Ronin went into the flank of a whole brigade and net the whole brigade. Like, foemen on the front, three spearmen, all in line, net them all.
Well, I mean, dice a thing.
Well, and I'm rolling one dice.
But yeah, that's the thing, is like, the skeletons are, can't be flanked. They wouldn't suffer dice less for terror.
But they'd be on nothing.
They would be on nothing if they did. And that is just, yeah, exactly. You can't have that. You just lost all the units for nothing.
Yeah, so that one unit of Ronin took out four units, plus the Skulltrick, six units in a turn. Because And it still had two stands left.
And still good.
And another one went in and it hit a unit of skeletons and wiped out first round. Because it had some help from some friends. But only that one could pursue. So that... Sorry, pursue, is that the right word?
Advance.
Advance. And it advanced into the side, because it could advance 20, yep. of another brigade and hit the whole brigade mm-hmm. in the flank. So two units of Ronin took, I think it was 11 break in a turn. And we're still both. There's still two stands left.
So enough to break a regular, like, the score of a regular army, isn't it? Really, yeah. Most armies are break point 10.
And then obviously I've lost nothing.
Yeah.
And hardly anything in my army counts for anything anyway.
Yeah.
And the other army's nearly dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, as much as I love the look of Tomb Kings, the thought of having to defend with them is just horrific.
I would play any army in War Master because I like the game so much. Like, and if I had unlimited funds, I would own every army. But yeah, interesting, interesting. You'd way to play Tomb Kings.
The complete opposite of dwarves. Yeah. You can't rely on them to take anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously the chariots are very.
I mean,
we've
done a Tomb Kings episode, so you know, for in our previous episode. So, if in doubt, go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, what we think about. They are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say it was a good game. I'm not sure it was an overly good game because it was dominated by stuff getting eaten in one turn quite easily. So,
The other thing we've done hobby-wise, which is not War Masters, we've both been to SmogCon. Barry as a press ganger staff, and me as a punter. For those who don't know, basically SmogCon is a 3-day non-stop convention,
yeah.
which is set in this time the Radisson Blue Hotel in Heathrow, and it's a British convention of an American style,
based on an American style. Yeah.
And it is, as I say, non-stop. It is non-stop.
24 hours a day. Playing games 24 hours a day
of War Machine. I took part in Masters A and then casual gaming and Barry.
You were nearly a winner in on for the day two.
I had to win. Yeah, basically it was six. It was a over 100 player like listed tournament. The top, if you won all four games, the top eight. That's of those that would be what's left would go through to the basically to play three more games in the final. I won the first three and was on to win the last one. Sadly, I didn't. But yeah, out of the guys that I knew had entered, I think I did the best. I came 16th over 100. So it's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, and I don't want to like cry about it, but like the last game, I was list locked into using. He had a very good answer. Thyron was a very good answer for Hayden 3.
Yeah, that's not that. List locking is an interesting thing because it's something you do to yourself.
Yeah.
So. I kind of challenged Paul about it because he was.
But I'm very much
get it out of the way early.
I'm very much of the camp that if this is going to war machine.
But it's an interesting strategy.
I'm very much of the consent that you should use like in War Machine. You have two lists for an event, and if you know your pairings, as in like what's a good bad matchup, you should choose the best one for that matchup because you have to win to win every game. And that means if you're list locked, at least in the final, for example, at least you're in the final.
You've got a chance.
Now, opposite our way to look at that is in my third round, I played this Norwegian called Gard. Gard Anderson. Gard. Yeah, anyway, he was like, he chose the wrong list in my head. And he's like,
because he was trying to unlock his list.
Trying to unlock his other list. And that meant he then lost the game. So he never made compete for the final anyway. So. In my fourth round, I had to. So this is to get into the Sunday event. I was like, well, I'm gonna have to use my off list, which hasn't had a good matchup yet, which is Hayley 3, or I'd say the better matchup. And I just came across. I just got undone by because the guy's a very good player.
And he knew what you were using.
He knew what I was going to use. He had a good answer for it. He's from a very good. He's from the Cross Gaming Club, so they're very good caliber players.
Yeah.
And I made a good game of it. I had a go. I didn't just capitulate. But Thyron, in this case, had basically Haley's list is a buff of clouds and a buff of defense, and Thyron has an answer to both.
Yeah.
So, damn. Basically, I'm having to play my list very differently, running knights and bouncing electroleaps off them to attack mage hunters, and that is okay, but that's not optimal. And
it's such an interesting idea. I mean, it's not something from the outside until you're playing it you understand, but when you get to the real top tier, you've got to know this is not the best list for this game, yeah, but I can play it well enough to win.
And then I think with me in War Machine, that's how I would... If I was to get better, I would have a two-list pairing that I could complement them well, and I could then see... Okay, what are the good and bad matchups? What are the matchups to play? And
well, I'm starting 60-40 matchup.
Yeah, I'm starting to get there with Signar, my main faction. I'm starting to understand it, but that's I think the caliber between where I would say is a acceptable player or a good player.
Yeah, good tournament player, certainly.
To the best one, to one who comes who positions in these big events. Is that if I could build two Signar lists, know the good and bad matchups, and when there are no good matchups, accept which one has the better chance. Yeah, I understand that one better, John. Like, at the moment, I'm at the stage where, like, a Kane 2 list I have, which I'm very happy with, I know what he can't kill, and I'm looking for something to go against the things he can't shoot, he can't kill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's very interesting. So, just an overview of my point of view from Smog, and I do casual gaming. So, Paul played in a competitive event, but there's casual gaming for the whole 72 hours.
Which I did for the other 2 days.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you play games, you win skulls. And those skulls are like prize points that you can redeem against prizes from our prize shop. So it's very carnival.
Funny, people got so fixated on that crap. It was hilarious.
There's some good stuff in there, but it's mainly dice. People want dice.
But there was basically none of those things on the table wasn't something you couldn't buy.
You can't buy the Privateer Press stuff.
Well, you can. You can get the Privateer Press.
No, you can't. They don't sell them.
Oh, I mean, basically people were like ruining themselves to get these things when you would just buy it.
You could buy it.
Yeah, like
except for the limited edition con stuff. But it's maybe this is the future of wargaming in general, because it's such a social event. When you take away the need to play in tournaments and people just play for the sake of playing, and they've got like they can there's no rush to play, there's like unlimited tables and you can play for 72 hours. It's an amazing thing.
I mean, we went down as a club and we had about 20 people and good acquaintances like that we knew as a venue there. So basically what happened was there were like no agenda. Like, and I booked us all a curry on the Saturday night.
Which went well.
Mistakes were made. Anyway, let's talk about that. But so what I'm saying is once I played...
I had a nice curry.
Yeah, I did as well. We had a good time, but, like, some people didn't. Yeah, like,
not many
yeah, like, so once I played in that main event, it was casual gaming, and actually I didn't play anybody I didn't know, because there was so many of us there that was just playing casually us, except you could cash these things in and actually earn something at the end of it as well. So it was very different. It's like, and I wouldn't have had the time to play everybody I knew. I just physically couldn't.
Yeah, and it wasn't like the venue was some grim, dingy, badly lit...
5-star hotel.
Yeah, like real class. It was superb. Can't recommend it enough. And a big shout out to John Webb, the Overmaster, who did it off his own back. He created SmogCon. He is SmogCon. Exactly. I'm just a captain. He's the boss.
I mean, he should be so proud of what he does, and he should learn to smile.
Okay, every day, smile in the mirror before breakfast. Right. So we've done about what we've been doing. All right, today's match. We'll do today's match.
Yeah, won't take long.
There's a funny story. We've said that games never get lost by generals dying, yeah?
Okay. They do now.
So, Paul, tell them your list, man.
Okay, so today's obviously podcast is, to the point, is about dwarves. And I have the most experience with dwarves. I've taken them to an event. My army's fully painted. I'm very happy with it. And
it looks nice.
And I'm now finalising, like, minute changes to, like, my tournament list, I would say, for dwarves. And this is it. At 2,000 points, you take 6 warriors.
You take 6 warriors.
I take 6 warriors. A handgunner unit, just 1. 2 rangers, 2 troll slayers, 2 cannons, 1 flame cannon, 2 gyrocopters, 1 general, 1 hero, 2 runesmiths, 1 as an anvil, and 1 as a scroll of dispelling. Gives me a scouting value of 6 from the gyrocopters and a breakpoint of 8 from the units. We'll go through the strengths and weaknesses of the dwarves coming up, so I don't want to talk about that.
No, absolutely.
But that is my tournament list, and I would change it now to drop one of the heroes down, or one of the characters, and have fit in another unit there, so I'd have breakpoint 9, and I could... Yeah, because a unit of troll slayers is the same price as one of my heroes or runesmith, so I could, like, fit in another unit there, etc. I really like dwarves. They... They're good. They're a good army. But we're going to come on to the strengths and weaknesses of it. But that was what I was using today.
So, as soon as I saw the list, I mean, it just shows how different we are, because I'll talk about my list. But Paul had 4 brigades and 4 heroes.
Yeah, because...
And to me, it's like, oh, my God. You played Empire, you had 6 heroes or something.
The thing is I play dwarfs the most, and I've obviously been like adapting it as I go along, and I do like to use something from everything in the army list. I just like to, like, yeah. So even though are the handgunners like something to take, I'll take a unit of them, you know, like I started on my first dwarf list with lots of them, and that wasn't a good idea. I do like to have like at least one of everything. It's just a personal thing. So I just like to have all options of a list, because there's debates. It's like, do you ever take gyrocopters, that kind of thing, and we'll come into that when we go.
Also, your brim is quite low. 8 is quite low.
But it is. But they are dwarves. I mean, your core unit is 110 points. He's not 30. You know, like,
no, there's
that's
no 30-point unit.
So it would be hard to get a high break point of dwarves. It really would.
I think maybe the 9 is about as far as you can go.
Yeah, because I am taking cheaper things in that list there. Like a flame cannon is 50 points, and he adds...
Yeah,
yeah, it's like, all I'm saying is, you couldn't max out on warriors, because you wouldn't have a higher break
point. No, I'm not sure you could get to 19. You could maybe get to 18 units. 19
so units. I'm quite happy with that as a dwarf list. Barry, what were you using today?
I was using the filth, sir. There's no other word for it. It's the unbeaten Nippon.
Mm.
So,
Spoiler, I remains unbeaten.
I'll post it up. I'm not sure how I feel about Nippon. Every time I use them, they do seem... Like, when you're playing with them, they do seem to have lots of weaknesses.
Mm.
But then it doesn't seem to matter.
It doesn't come across on the table, then, does it? Like,
you're chucking wave and wave and wave and wave of stuff in that you care not a jot of. But it's not like Bretonian chaff. It's like real meaty stuff that can do damage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, you're going to run through what you were using?
Okay, well, I mean, I'll post it up, but the way I build this list... Uh-huh. And I think it's very, very similar. It may even be like the same as Alex's list, Alex Janus. So, 3 samurai, 4 ashigaru, 8 ronin.
Ashigaru!
Ronin are just bonkers. There's no other word for 1 zealot monks with the shrine, because the shrine's insane. So, why wouldn't you? 4 samurai cavalry. They're my only cavalry. They're very good, though. And we've got Abbott, but he's the... The samurai abbot, so he becomes a daimyo or something.
Dynamo!
Okay, 2 heroes, one of them on the dragon lion thing, which is a weak flyer. If anybody knows what the difference between a weak flyer and a regular character is, could you let me know? Because I don't understand why you have to specify it's a weak flyer. Why does it not say it's not a flyer?
No, don't look at me.
Don't know. Is it because it can't go in certain types of terrain? I don't know. Makes no sense. Anyway, so we got, and we also got the funky retinue. So the hero has a one that allows him to roll 2 dice and use that for his first order, and the general has one that gives him +1 to his leadership once for his first order. So he's a leadership 10 for his first order. And then we have a sword on everybody that I never remember to use. We got Sword of Fate, Sword of Cleaving, Sword of Might.
Yeah. So today's game,
2,000 points. It says it's break. It's 10. It's not. It's 4 because of samurai.
Yeah. The table was set up, and I won the scouting roll. So I went.
All my scouting's 3 from the hero on the non-flying dragon.
So I chose the table side that was going to complement my army best, and basically lumps of like nice dwarf terrain to like protect my flanks.
Kept it nice and tight.
Like, I think my tactics were sound. Is in like, okay,
I expose no flanks.
I dominate with artillery. You know, like I can take a unit a turn, and I'm gonna grind him. On my dwarf anvil, because we endure. And then once I have to salvage enough of an army after killing all that chaff to then go after the samurai. And of the samurai cavalry will be difficult to catch. But as long as I like am sensible, I can go.
Because you don't need to just use rangers; you can use gyrocopters, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I intended. I failed the orders. That's what I intended to do.
Okay.
Yeah, when I had the heroes set up, I was going to send the gyrocopters over to shoot up your in a position.
But you could use them to. Can you not charge with them?
You could, though. Yeah.
Or like position them around the back to blow stuff up.
Anyway, so I was quite. Yeah, I was quite happy. I was like, right, I'm due a win against Barry, and it's like I'm going to prove this Nippon army isn't stupid, and I was gonna have a win. Sadly, though, the game's dice, and Barry made combat with. There was three combats engaged.
Two went on an initiative. One was an order.
Yeah. So three brigades of mine against Barry.
It's like one went in on a blunder.
Yeah, on a blunder. But like, anyway, and Barry did the one in the middle,
which was the one Paul should have hammered.
I'm telling you, hammered. That's not just me saying that.
It was two units of Ascari versus
six up armor save,
four on the charge, obviously, yeah. Four attacks on the charge, with a couple of bits of Ronin behind, which provided support for the first turn only. Because if I win the combat, I leave my support behind, and this is where dwarves are good.
Against a unit of dwarves, troll slayers and dwarves. Troll slayers in the middle, so they can't be picked on. I've got a lot of attack dice and a lot of armor.
Happy days.
Happy days. You know, like, I'll probably lose the first round of combat.
I'll strip my support out, which happens.
Yeah, and then if Barry chooses to pursue, which he might as well, because his stuff's all expendable, I will overall win, or should do.
Yeah, and I kind of limited my exposure. I didn't chuck everything in. I didn't go gung-ho. I was kind of putting in enough to win, or what I thought had a chance of winning, without committing too much.
But what happened was, I just did not roll any dice.
Yeah, you're thinking, how could this possibly mean you've lost the game, Paul? You lose three units.
I know.
So what happened is I drove him back into his general, Dane, who was right by the front, obviously, where Dane wants to be.
Yeah.
And Paul, being gung-ho and wanting to defend his eight break, decided to put Dane in the last unit standing, which was warriors.
Yeah.
And he'd hammered me. There wasn't much of my stuff left. Maybe two stands of Ascari. But they were in the flank. Anyway.
Yeah, well, the reason I chose to do that was because I said I have to salvage enough of an army to fight the samurai once the second game basically happens.
The real game.
The real game. And the thing is, you work out averages, and it's like that was a safe bet. You know, like
I was expecting nothing from that combat, just to weaken your brigade.
Yeah, yeah. So when I decided to send the king in because he'd been pushed into it. I wanted to salvage a unit of dwarf warriors. Basically, you were gonna. We did the math afterwards, isn't it? You rolled 12 dice. You get 6 hits on average, and that results in 3 wounds because I've got a 4 up armor save.
Yeah.
I'm doing back 8 attacks, which result in 4 hits, which should be
3 wounds.
3 wounds. Because you've got a 6 up armor save. So.
No, 3 wounds with the 6 up.
Yeah. So I draw. Maybe I even win.
Yeah.
You know. Didn't
not
happen.
So much.
Not so much. Basically, I failed every armor roll. My general died.
I did say when he put his general in, are you sure?
Because,
I mean, if the dice didn't spike, you should win. But I said, if the dice spike, this could be the game. And the dice spike.
Yeah, so we played that game in under 45 minutes. which is a shame because, as I say, like, my tactics were there. If after a game when you lose, you're like, would you do that again? I probably would.
Well, not the king.
The way I was set up, the way I was like, right, I know what I've got to do.
The brigades were sound.
The
brigade tactics were sound.
The army that I've worked out, as in, I'm a happy army list, I'm good with it, I've got wins before,
It's really hard to outflank.
Yeah.
Because you don't let yourself be outflanked.
Yeah, yeah. And
you have to hit them in the front, and it's not easy hitting dwarves in the front.
Well, that's where you want them to be. Anyway, that didn't happen.
So next time. So I've got something for you, Paul. I've been chasing round.
Ooh.
Birthday present. It's belated because we didn't do one last week.
Oh, thanks very much. This is generally, I did not know this was coming to me. It's a pack of blue dice.
So they're blue for Signar.
Thank you very much.
And they're dice because you need some new dice.
I do. Yeah, clearly after that. Brilliant. They will go, I will use them for my Empire army because they're going to be Middleheim and their colours are blue and white. Okay.
Who'd have thought you'd paint blue?
Yes.
You love pink and blue.
Yeah, yeah. So or I could use them as dwarves because obviously their predominant colour is blue as well.
Okay. Well, happy days.
Thank you.
Merry Thanks Christmas. Always happy birthday.
Thanks Merry very Christmas. Much. That's very nice.
Okay, so what's next on our list of good? Fluff.
Aha, right. Okay.
Diggity.
So first of all, we're going to be putting a little pause here for you to truly understand dwarf fluff. We have a little song for you, like from Yogcast, going now.
Okay.
Digging the horn, diggy, diggy horn, diggy, diggy horn. stop your bellies at the feast. Stumble home and fall asleep, dreaming in our mountain deep. Born underground, grown inside a rocky womb. The earth is our cradle, the mountain shall become our tomb. Face us on the battlefield, you will meet your doom. We do not fear what lies beneath, we can never dig too deep. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole, diggy, diggy hole. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole, digging a hole. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole, diggy, diggy hole. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Diggy, diggy hole.
Okay, I'm back with you. I hope you enjoyed that song, because I loved it.
I think it's a generational thing. Not that I'm that much older than you, but
well, basically, at SmogCon, Sherwin linked us to, like, oh, everyone, this is the song for today's event. And I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, like, and I was just like, and it just became the anthem of our group, basically. Diggy dee hole, diggy dee hole to you, sir.
See, I do like YouTube. Yeah. Like, there was a Game of Thrones thing. I don't know if you've seen the Winter's Trumping. Winter's Trumping. If you find that, man, that is funny. That is talent.
Yeah, that is seriously good. It's basically Donald Trump put into Game of Thrones scenes, and he interacts with the characters. It's so well done.
Oh, it's awesome.
Like, the dialogue is sound, and it's just like, it's political, it's brilliant. Yeah.
So, what if he leaves outside, we're going to die? It's just a temporary measure. It's not permanent.
It's like, he's up in the north. I need to build a big wall. And in that wall, we're going to have a big gate. Like, you can come in if you've got a
puzzle. It'd be the biggest wall like ever me. Built. Fantastic, man. Find it.
So, first of all,
Fluff. Hit us with the fluff bomb.
Barry, what do you think the fluff is?
Oh, man. You see, there's no point. I'll be honest. There's no point because I've played D&D. I've played Warhammer. I like Lord of the Rings. I've played a bit of that. It all gets mixed up. The only thing I know about dwarves is they should hate elves. So they hate elves.
Do dwarves use swords?
Well, they can use whatever they're in. Then Lord of the Rings.
Like, okay.
In D&D, dwarves and elves are kind of like matey, and they go, "This is not right." You know what
it's
I mean?
A bit gay, isn't
they're like
it?
Common. You've got like your three common races: dwarves, elves, and humans. I'm like, no, I'm a dwarf. I hate elves. I don't care what the fluff says. So yeah, I think. I mean, let's face facts. A lot of Warhammer fantasy fluff is stolen from Lord of the Rings. If you go back far enough.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Okay.
I'm sure. So there, they hate elves. I'm sure they hate Skaven.
They fucking love them.
Yeah, I'm sure they. Oh, that's an F-bomb though. So, yeah, that's about all I know. And they probably like gold. They probably like diggity-digging. Diggity-diggy gold.
Right. Okay,
they've
so,
got no cavalry.
Yeah, okay,
unless you're playing Kings of War. Badger Riders.
Badger Riders.
Which are awesome. Or Dane with his pig.
War pig. I wish there was a war pig.
Yeah, like, there should be war. In fact, there were those war pig models, which you could use as rangers. They're superb.
Yeah.
From Uica,
Goat Riders.
It? Goat rides.
Yeah.
Super.
War goats.
And war goat chariots.
Yeah. Okay, so... Oh, yeah, so the dwarf...
Tell us the fluff.
So, it's a phrase like, Ishkakwi Druk Nul is dwarves. Dwarf fluff's very good. Okay, they are a seminal race in Oldhammer. Basically, who the dwarves are is obviously...
Did they make it out alive?
Well, that's going to the end. Ask me at the end of this.
Okay, I'll ask you if they make it out alive.
So,
Bugman, save Bugman!
Dwarves obviously are... physically, they're shorter than humans. They're a lot stouter. They're a lot tougher, hardier. And
Jordan Webb should have been a dwarf.
The racial characteristics are that they've got very long memories. They live for a long time. They're not immortal, but they do live for a long time. They're quite into their beards. They like beer, but they like gold more than anything else. And they are a race that was created, like, original race, along with elves. There was dwarves. They're ancient race in Oldhammer. And basically, after the elves had their day in the sun, dwarf empire was like everywhere. Basically, the whole of the World Edge Mountains, where they're predominantly from, was Karax, is what they call his holds, were up in the mountains. Underway, they had the Ungrum, which is the like the underway of the basically the dwarf M25.
Right, you know, like, the underway, yeah.
You know, and it was like a fantastic like civilization, very advanced, like, you know, they're very cultured. You know, they're master.
It's not going to end well.
They're master craftsmen. They're not. They're not overly warlike, but they just don't see the point of other people, other races, in terms of when they can do things themselves.
Yeah.
You know. So they. But they would. Their best relationship is with humans, who they've like basically back in the day of Sigmar's time, he helped save the dwarf king, and since then, like.
That's where the cannons come from.
Dwarves and humans have been on like good, fairly good terms, but they do fall out over like payment of bills and things like that. But you know, they have never come to like a major war. Like they take pride in their ability to build to last, and the dwarf phrase for dwarf build is a byword for indestructible, while the dwarven word for shoddy translates literally as man-made. Like, you know, like, so they had this fantastic empire, and so, but it, then the downfall of the golden times was that they had a falling out with the high elves. And over, basically, it was a dark elf plot to like get the two races to war against each other. It worked, and the high elves and dwarves went to a war over bad relationships, basically bad PR, for hundreds of years, and it exhausted both sides. You know, luckily, at neither of those periods of time was there a great chaos incursion or something, because that probably would have turned them away from each other to defend their own borders. But they basically, the best of a generations was wasted fighting each other over something they could have just an insult, an implied insult.
Right.
High elves are very haughty and arrogant. Dwarves don't say sorry. They it was quite easy to engineer a dispute between the two.
Right.
At the end of that, the high elves lack the numbers to like have a colonies really in the old world. All run back to Ulthuan, Horseshoe World.
Yeah,
Horseshoe
we talked land. About that.
Ulthuan. And the dwarves are left like to hole up in their. They're basically, this begins the start of their what's the right word where you draw your, within yourself and like you don't want to go outside.
Yeah.
You know, like
I don't know. You're right about the word.
Recluse phase.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't think of the right
word. So they withdraw, like isolationists.
Okay. They became, from then on, they were isolationists. So they hole up in their carracks, and that's that. Then, obviously, after then, their carracks have been under, some have been under almost continual siege. The Skaven put in an appearance for the first time, attacking dwarf holds from underneath. Orcs and goblins always trying to get them, you know, and Chaos obviously don't like it either. And some, like, one by one, these dwarf holds over the years eventually fall or get broken into. The best one, like Carrack Eight Peaks, the original, like, the jewel in the crown of the Dwarf Empire falls. And the minor, there's minor holds, but that was the first major hold to go down.
Right.
And what you have left in the time of ending of Oldhammer is that twin year 2500-something, is you have some major dwarf holds are still there. The capital is still around, but they are a race on decline. And in going forward into their end times books, you know, they go a bit more on the offensive. They want to have a new golden age and reclaim lost, holds and values and technologies. It doesn't work though, and they end up, you know, dying in the end times, you know, by not contributing. Basically, they could, if is it the same like in the end times? The sad story is, if all the worlds of the old world united, they might have had a chance. They don't, and thus do not have a chance
against the Moonrock.
Against Nagash, Endless Legions, and Chaos.
The Moonrocket, yeah,
yeah, the Moonrocket, and they do. Going set end, it's a shame because they basically had hoarded the strength left and just didn't use it. Just didn't go all out. Like
only something dwarfish going all out.
Only the Slayer King decides to be offensive in this time. Umgrim Ironfist, and they make a difference. But if the whole race had turned their attention to just I'll pretend not thinking, oh, we'll be safe if we hang up, we hang in here. Well, if there's no world, there's no, they're not safe anymore, are they? I really like him. Really, dwarves are good.
Did they make it out?
They are in Age of Sigmar. They're not called dwarves anymore. They're called some bullshit. And
that's two F-bombs. Oh, sorry. You might have to go two F-bombs.
Okay, yeah. Okay, they're called some rubbish. And the latest dwarf sculpts they've done a Slayer army. They're riding stupid monsters. They look like they're out of Flash Gordon, like Hawkman. You know, like, to me, my Hawkman. And it's a real shame.
A lot of them look like Brian Blessed.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, like just ginger beards. And it's, I mean,
it's... You know why they're doing it? To protect their IP. They're making IP. There's no IP to protect at the moment because it's all generic.
I hope they're paying off Flash Gordon then, because they ripped them off.
No, you can rip off IP. You can rip off other people's IP. You just, yeah, you can't rip off their IP.
It's a shame because... they were a good race. In fantasy, they had a chronic problem of being a castling up too much a defensive army. In Warmaster, yeah, they got a, you know, they can come for, they can attack more. They're a better
leadership eight. Yeah, 10 weeks than me.
Yeah, they're a better army in Warmaster than they are in Oldhammer. Because in Oldhammer, your options are severely limited to what you can actually do. And I do know that because I played dwarves for an entire year of Oldhammer, and there's limited like what you can do. You really, it's like, well, you lack cavalry. You know what? Yeah. You can't move far. And they are a good race. They the main difference between GW dwarves and Lord of the Rings dwarves is like a weaponry thing. They never use swords. They use axes and hammers solely. Aside from major, I suppose they are pretty much the dwarves in Lord of the Rings as well. Like, I can't think of any other major differences because they're my favourite scene in Lord of the Rings is Moria. You know, like in the books, it was the chapters in Moria. In the Fellowship of the Ring, it's the Moria scenes, the ancient dwarf kingdom of like that once was.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that. You know, that's the same fluff really for dwarves in GW.
But even in Lord of the Rings, there were barely any dwarves
left. Yeah. There are some, but there aren't many around.
I mean, they don't commit very much, do they?
No. Okay. I mean, it's implied.
Even the elves commit.
It's implied in the book that they are fighting in their own lands. But you never read about it, you never see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, so, dwarf army lists.
Right.
Look at the army list, I'll go first.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go. So, warriors, infantry, 3 attacks, 4 hits, 4 plus armour. Unit size 3, 110 points, minimum 2. No special rules.
Don't need them.
They are tough as...
Yeah,
tough as...
Okay, so there are no dwarf special rules, like army rules. They're following all the rules of the game, with no abbreviations. And warriors are their only unit that has a minimum. So in a 2,000-point list, you have to take 4 units.
Which is 440 points. That's a lot of points for 4 units.
When you factor in the general's 155, yes.
So that's 600 points before you start building.
Before you start. But they're a very good unit.
You can't have too many of them because they're too expensive.
Yes,
they're like ogres.
Dwarves don't have a chaff unit really, and their cheapest unit is 80 points. So they do not have a expendable, really truly expendable unit, like a 30-point goblin unit. They don't have that.
No.
But what you do have is a 4+ armor save,
and four hits,
which are both fantastic. Yeah, so their weakness is the amount, and that's a army weakness, is the amount of attack dice is their weakness in dwarf lists. But they can endure.
Normally that would be something you'd buff with magic if you couldn't do it on the stats. Yeah,
yeah. But again, we're going to jump forward.
Okay, so next line, sir.
Handgunners, infantry. Obviously, dwarves have 4 types of infantry. They attack 3 and 1 shooting. They have 4 hits, which is the dwarf thing. They only have a 6+ armour. They're 3 units in a stand, and they're 90 points. No min or maximum. And they have a handgunner rule where they drop a armour saves by 1 for their shooting. So this is the trap. I think, personally, this is the trap of the dwarf list, is you don't want to take too many units of handgunners, because they die too easily. You know,
They die less in when we're using the fight to front.
Yes.
Before the fight to front, they were annihilated.
Yeah, yeah. When my first dwarf list, I would take a lot of handgunners and I'd set them up like Empire infantry. So dwarf handgunners in the front and dwarf infantry behind. But then you lose the dwarf handgunners in a fight and that you don't have a big breakpoint and you don't want to lose them in a fight. So I only tend to take one unit now.
What's the purpose of that one? Just because you like to take one?
If the enemy army is flyers, then the dwarf handgun unit sets up in front of my artillery. So if the flyers commit, they're going to have to fight my artillery, my handgunners first, who hopefully are on a hill or something, who will make a much better fight of it than my artillery.
Yeah, they'll do some damage on the way in.
And you might, you'd have to.
It will certainly deter.
They might even win. So that's what they do, and they're there to help protect. They help to help fire and combat support to the artillery brigade.
Okay. So that's, I can see you take one for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Okay, so next is Rangers, infantry, 3 attacks, 1 ranged again, 4 hits, that's the dwarf thing, 5 up armor save, 3 per unit, 110 points, min-max is 0-2, and they have a special 2. They're different to all of the dwarves in that they can chase cavalry.
So this is a necessary rule to make the army playable, because if you had no unit that could chase cavalry, you couldn't play the army. Basically, it would be silly because you have to have that potential to chase. And Rangers can even chase flyers. I don't know how they do it, but like they can do it.
They just hang on to the claws and drag them down.
Something like that.
Like the Skaven rule, that makes me laugh.
Basically, Rangers are the dwarves who live above ground. Basically, the Ranger clans are the most dwarves live in mountains underground, and Rangers are their necessary link to the outside.
Okay, so Rangers, even more so than Skaven, are abstraction to make the game function.
They have to work. Yeah, they have to.
It makes no. If you think about it, like using laws of physics and stuff, it doesn't make any sense. You've just got to put that to one side. Without this unit, the list wouldn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And when we come on to Skaven, this is a Skaven rule, army rule. And if you didn't have that, you couldn't play the army. So, yeah, because they're all infantry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how many units do you take and what?
I think the biggest choice in a dwarf list is like how many rangers you take. I take 2 because I've built my 3 combat brigades. And 2 of them on the flanks have the potential then to at least chase off some cavalry, and look for opportunity. They're only slightly weaker than warriors, but sometimes that slightly weaker is everything. With a 5-up armor save,
but same cost as warriors.
Yeah, the same.
Sorry, I don't think I said the cost. Yeah, was 110.
You did. Yeah. So it's some people would like. Obviously, some people would take all 4 units that you can have. I'm favouring 2 at the moment.
Okay. If you had 3 combat brigades, maybe it wouldn't be a stretch to have 1 in each.
Yeah,
maybe.
Because
then all the brigades would have a potential.
Yeah, and
if you protect them in the middle, I guess.
Is something to look at. Maybe try another game, is try that.
Because if you've got cavalry, otherwise they just pick up the one that doesn't have the one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Troll Slayers, a very interesting unit. Infantry, 5 attacks with 4 hits for no armor save, 3 units stand and 80 points and min max, no minimum, maximum 2. They have some interesting rules. They are the flagellants of this list. They must charge against when they can. They love fighting monsters, so they get a +1 attack against fighting monsters.
I mean, that's a crazy amount of attacks. 7 attacks on the charge.
Right. And obviously, they don't suffer from terror. And their victory points is interesting because Troll Slayers and the Fluff are dishonored dwarves for some reason. They hold themselves in very high esteem, dwarves, and if something goes wrong in their, like, I don't know, they stole something or they were dishonored in some way, a dwarf thing is to shave your head, apart from a mohawk, dye it orange, and go troll slaying. And basically, this is brilliant for the dwarves. Is they're stubborn to a fault, so they can't. They've got to go die in battle. So, but they can't do badly. Like, as in, they can't purposely do badly.
It's good as this. You just keep fighting harder and harder.
Basically, they eschew armor because that would be too easy. Like, they wouldn't. But they can't fight badly. So they've got to go fight the hardest thing they can find.
Okay, so that's
and try and win.
Like dragon, demon,
whatever. It's a very interesting fluff.
So is that the level they fought? So you've got like Troll Slayer, they fought trolls.
Basically,
they're
just terms given on, but they all start. Obviously, they all start as Troll Slayers when they kill off some trolls. They're like, oh, you're better than that.
Right.
Like, and then they go to giants and they kill a giant. Oh, now you're a giant slayer. Oh, you killed a dragon. Oh, now you're a dragon slayer. And it basically and it's like failed suicide bombers. It's like you don't have successful suicide bombers, do you? Because they would kill themselves.
They've got to die, won't
they? Yeah, like, and like, basically, the best troll slayers aren't very good at their job because they haven't died yet.
Try harder.
Try harder.
But they still count towards break. They might and victory points are a minor thing.
It's a minor thing, but basically, dwarf troll slayer units are giving away victory points from the start of the game. But if they're dead, if they're wiped out, they give away no victory points.
Right. But still count to them. So you take
count
two
for
of those.
Break. So
you take two.
Most people, it wouldn't matter because they count for break and they're only interested if they won or they lost. But in the victory points, they're reversed.
So they're 2 per 1,000.
Yeah, so you could take four.
I'm tempted to take
Can't brigade them with other troll slayers. You can't have a unit of troll slayers.
Well, I'll take three then. If I've got three brigades, I'll take
yeah,
three.
Yeah, I think it's good to have, if you can, a brigade led by a unit of troll slayers. Because they don't get driven back by shooting. If you're facing against shooting, you can, like, you know, anticipate that. And their five attacks can hurt, but...
And they've got no armour, but four hits is a thing.
They are a necessary tool that you need. If there's a lot of terror around, again, we'll come on to that, as a weakness of the army, you need some troll slayers around, really.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to charge them with a unit of flying monsters.
No. No, you wouldn't.
For 18 attacks.
They're like, basically, they're the most expendable thing in the dwarf. It's not the expendable unit, is not the handgun, it's the troll slayers. And hopefully they do a big dent in whatever takes them out.
Okay, right, next. It is the signature piece, cannon. Artillery, so they get one attacking melee, but that's not what they're there for. They get two attacks, but they're cannon, so that changes. Two hits, six of armor save, two per unit. They got 90 points cost, and they're 1 per 1,000, which means they're two.
You take two. Yeah.
There's no alternative.
If you're not playing cannons with dwarves, I don't know what you're doing, really. Like, I mean, Janaway might dispute this, but...
No, he would take two. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So they're exactly as you'd expect cannons to be. Don't ever put yourself in line like I did.
Sometimes you can't help it.
No,
and it's they are what the dwarves are all about. This is why the enemy comes to them. It's because they have cannons.
Yeah.
You know, and they have range six.
And those two cannons, if you're in column, 16 dice, no armor save, that
bang.
Stings.
Yeah. Bang. Because if you don't wipe them out in wounds, you'll wipe them out in drive backs anyway.
Yeah, because that's that's 8 wounds.
You only need to do 7, 14, 28. Yeah, you only need to do 5 wounds to drive someone away.
Yeah, but you're doing 8 wounds.
Say 6 wounds. Yeah, which will unless you roll
only got one wound left on
against a skew, you've driven them off anyway.
So delete.
Yeah, these might as well be minimum one. Yeah, because you're going to take 2 units of them.
Okay, next one.
Flame cannon, artillery. One attack in close combat. I should say about cannons, they have a 6 of armour save. No other artillery has that.
I didn't even know it. I don't think it ever helped. When
can
they
do. Yeah, like 2d6 attacks. These are flame cannons. And then they have 2 hits each, a 6er plus armour save, 1 a unit in sand, and 50 points.
So I think this is...
There's a misprint in this.
Yeah, because I didn't know where my bounce was.
No,
it's on yours.
No, it should be... The bounce is a misprint. It should be on the...
But this is
cannons.
The official text.
Yes.
So it's not your fault.
No, it's not my fault. Yeah, like,
so 1, 2d6. Yeah. And then what else we got?
But they don't have a negative against armour saves. Basically, if you roll it... Basically, when they attack, they're the highest...
And what's the range?
30. And they're full effectiveness at 30. They're the biggest attack dice generator in the War Master. Yeah.
Flame cannon, 18 attacks potentially.
Because you can roll a double 6... And if you roll a double, it has a further result. And if you roll a double 6, you get another d6 attacks, which could be another 6. So that would be 18 attacks. On average, obviously, they do 7, you know, like in a shot. But they don't take away armor saves. But against unarmored stuff, lightly armored stuff, they are horrible flame cannons.
Yeah.
Because, like, you would charge, like, basically, I'm now using a flame cannon amongst my cannons. So if someone charges them, they're going to get hurt, and if I get lucky, I might wipe out something on the charge.
Well, realistically, how many? If we charge your 4 cannons and 1 flame cannon, you're taking 8 plus 2d6.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you get armor save, but 8 plus 2d6.
Yeah, yeah. So say I'm rolling
15 on
15
average.
15 dice, 8 hits, 7 hits. Yeah. You know,
depends on your armor, I guess.
Depends on your armor, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it can be. It can certainly be. It might take 2 stands out, mightn't it? You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So. And that's the trick, isn't it? Is like sometimes what is left, because you can't, like, those wounds will count for the first round of combat. So the enemy, you remove the stands, but they're not like driven back from the standing and shooting.
Yeah.
So they are, what's left of that enemy charred unit is going to be in combat and probably and will do some damage. But if it misses its hit roll, it's to hit, it will be lost to the fight. So it's not a definite. Like it's a if you charge this, you're going to lose this. You're going to.
I'd probably take a second one and make an even bigger.
Artillery brigade.
Yeah, I think so. But that would be the whole brigade then, because it's now four.
That's four.
So
I mean,
you can't have protection
on the
front.
I'm using two cannons, a flame cannon, and a ranger and a handgunners.
Yeah,
that's what I'm using.
That's probably sensible too. Yeah, anyway, case
so it's very good. Gyrocopter machine. One attack, three shots, three hits, five up armor save. It's a flyer. One of them, you get 75 points. Min maximum is 1 in 1,000. And it's so this is the thing, you either love them or hate them. I take them. I think
you take two of them.
Yes, I think gyrocopters are very good. They help for your obviously your scouting value, and they are very quick. Adaptable pieces, so you can send them 100 centimeters to Spieth to land 30 centimeters away from what you want to shoot at. Shoot it; it'll at least drive it back some distance. So if it's cavalry, they're at least two orders away then. And being on a narrow frontage, one stand that can fly, sometimes they get away with fights, like because a unit of cavalry charges them or something, say. Doesn't do those three wounds by luck.
I did it. And we lost. Yeah. There was a game early on, Lizardmen.
Yeah.
That we played, and I charged Saurus Knights.
Yeah.
Into these.
Yeah.
And we didn't do enough, and they floated off.
Away.
And then turned around, and everybody blew me away.
Yeah.
And that was the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's I really like them as adaptive. You hold them back, basically. They are there, like waiting to come forward. In the Dwarf Fluff, they're new, relatively new technology, and they're used as messengers between the dwarf characters because they don't have phones, do they? So like, this is how they get messages around. And
they have little motorbikes on the superhighway.
Yeah. Well, they had kind of like steam trains, but they're very good units. Like I think I would take two of them personally, but you don't have to. Like
I think it's interesting.
Can be easily lost, and you can't have things easily lost in a dwarf list.
I would have no qualms about sending a unit of flyers into them.
Of course you would.
And that's too easy break.
That's too easy break. But
if you could get them.
Dwarves have got to watch out for flyers. If there are other flyers on the table, you don't make it easy for them. Don't let them be in one move. Make them at least so they have to move somewhere to get the sight. You know, make it harder.
Characters. That's it. That's all the list. So is it the normal 2, 4, 6, 7? Oh, it's one short. Normally you get 8. You only get 7.
Yeah. But I think personally the dwarf list is a really good list because there's no bad. I think there's no like choices you never take. You know, it's a good list in that sense, like because it's everything has a place.
Do they not use crossbows? Am I thinking of something else?
Yeah, they do, and that's what the rangers are holding.
Okay, there we go. That's where I'm thinking of crossbows. Right, so we've got General. He's one of the best generals in the game. All generals have 2 attack. He's got to command 8, though. Oh, sorry, command 10. But he's 155 points.
Yep.
So he's top boy.
Dane.
He does a lot of work.
He does a lot of work.
Which is why I'm surprised you take 4 characters.
He does a lot of work. I think as I play more and more with dwarves, it's like, you're right. You know, and so I would probably drop one of those runesmiths. He's very good.
He does a lot of work, man.
Very good.
A lot of work.
Major strength, isn't it? Major strength for the army.
That's what makes them so aggressive. Because you think they're going to be defensive, but they're not.
They don't have to be. Because he can say, you can get a flank charge on an 8. You know, it's quite good.
Yeah.
As good as it gets. Yeah, because he first order to the
what
flank.
Set? 7.
No, command 10.
Yeah.
Second order, 9, flank.
8. Yeah, right. It's good.
Yeah, enemy near. Yeah. So, that's strong.
Yeah, that's high and strong.
Yeah,
but they can get it on a 9. They can get it on a 9, can't they, with cavalry? Which
yes.
They get absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So, Silverhelm's in the side on a 9.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
That's not pleasant.
Yeah.
So, Runesmith, you could talk about him.
Hero.
Oh, hero.
So,
hero's a hero.
1 attack, 8 command, 80 points. Same value as
any other hero. Even an orc hero.
Yep. A runesmith is also a hero, no wizard, naturally. 1 attack, command 8, 90 points. So he's very good value. For 10 points extra, you get his dispel ability, and he is a hero. He's not a wizard.
Okay, and that dispels, is it a
If an enemy caster casts a spell within 50 centimetres of a runesmith on a 4+, dispels it. Dwarves don't have magic, but they do. They're the only army that has a dispel roll, basically.
No.
So
there was no magic in this game.
So that's very strong. It's well thought out.
It's even better in Nippon.
It's well thought out to be 50 centimetres because it means that you'll always get a dispel against the 30 centimetre range spells, but not against the 60.
So how about like a 60 centimetre bubble that counts?
Only counts
the wizard, but counts your stuff as well.
We'll come on to Nippon at some point, won't we? They're the biggest bone to pick. And for 50 points extra, you can take a anvil, which means that he does the dispel on a 3+ once per battle, and also he gets gets to smash the Ranvil on a 4, 5, or 6 in the magic phase. All doors within 20 centimetres of the room are unaffected by terror,
which is big.
Which is a big deal. Yeah,
a big deal.
So obviously the anvil's only maximum one. You could have two, couldn't you?
One per thousand.
Oh, you could actually. But
I don't know if you could afford the points.
No, you wouldn't. But it's worth having a runesmith on an anvil, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It definitely changed where I played because you had it on your left flank and I went right flank.
Yeah. So we're gonna. We have to talk about strengths and weaknesses. Okay. So we've gone through every list in the door. Every unit in the dwarf list.
And these are kind of what I off the bat. So.
Yeah. And we'll think up others. Right. So strengths. Cannons, obviously. Yeah,
Empire have them.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that make Empire great.
The only difference in the Empire cannons is that they don't have the armour save.
Yeah. Marginal.
I know, it's a marginal thing, but
if you're getting charged, they go in anyway.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, tough infantry.
Like, ridiculously tough infantry. Yes. Hit them in the front and they shouldn't
units
go anywhere.
Units of dwarf warriors formed up for defence are just like, unless the dice obviously say otherwise, they shouldn't. They would lose the first round, but then they're gonna win.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm not sure everybody plays fight to front.
Yeah.
And the other thing where you leave your support behind.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But that makes a big difference for dwarves.
Yeah.
That increases the tier level.
Without those rules, dwarves would really struggle.
Really.
Really struggle.
And I think when you post up, you say, "Oh, you know, I won again with dwarves," and people go, "Really? How are you winning with dwarves?" And I think some of the rules changes have made playing dwarves better.
But certainly not overpowered.
I mean stuff like cavalry, they don't care about support anyway.
Yeah.
They'll hit you in the front and they'll eat whatever's there.
Yeah, exactly. Anvil is a major strength, obviously, because they can be a very good. They can really shut down enemy magic because as an anvil, you could take you'd call it a rune of dispelling, wouldn't you? So you can defaultly stop one spell and have.
So you've got 70 points of magic defense.
Yeah.
And magic can be good in this game, but it's not overbearing.
But you can.
So they're not getting much off.
You can. I mean, dwarf spells that would hurt would be like a unit moving into a flank of a command spell, or a unit suffering then terror and an attack dice modifier. That would really hurt a dwarf, and that gives you a chance to stop it.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be overly worried about things like raising zombies in my back or skeletons, because you just smash them up anyway.
Leadership 10, obviously.
That's always a massive challenge.
That's always a strength in any army that has leadership 10.
And cheap you know, leadership 10.
I suppose so, yeah, definitely.
Not 180.
No, he's not 180, is he? He's not.
No.
So, again, like...
The difference between leadership 10 and leadership 9 can't be overestimated.
Can't be understated, yeah.
And the difference between 9 and 8...
It's
ridiculous. Because on 8, I mean, Paul talked about he's moving one order to move infantry into the flank, and then the second order to go in, so it's a 10 and an 8.
Mm-hmm.
For orcs, it's an 8 and a 6.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It shouldn't happen, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of it happening, it's likely not to happen.
It doesn't happen, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so weaknesses.
Weaknesses.
They obviously have no cavalry, and cavalry is king in Warmaster.
It is king.
Dwarves don't have it. Yeah, like,
I don't think they should have it either.
No, it wouldn't fit. They've never, in the old Hammer Fluff, they've never ridden anything. They just have not. Like, they've got ponies that they use for mines.
Right.
They don't ride a pony into war.
No.
In the Lord of the Rings, like, films, they brought out some, like, goat cavalry, and Dane was riding a pig. It's like, that looks amazing. But they're not. That's not Old Hammer. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you had Gimli wouldn't get on a horse, would he? He'd rather run.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
They have a very bad problem with a low damage output. If they just do not have a lot of attacks, really. Like, Troll Slayers do, but the rest of the units only have 3 attacks, and they often don't get the charge. Yeah,
you can bank on them not getting the charge most of the time.
Yeah, so that is a problem, is they don't roll a lot of attack dice. You can obviously you can supplement it by using a being aggressive with a hero with a sword a rune of hitting, let's say, rune of cleaving, and that would help a little, but they just don't have a lot of attack dice.
So that is interesting that they don't have. I don't know what you can do about that. I don't know if you.
You just accept that's one of the things of the army. That's just you just don't have a lot of attack dice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just not something you can work
on. Slayers.
So things like getting flanked and terrifying characters, which were gone. We've already talked about how bad it is for you, but like, it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Flanked, terrifying characters, you've got one attack. Yeah, it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have that. It's dwarves. Because no matter how good your armor save is, you won't win.
No, you've got no support. Yeah. You've got one attack per stand.
Yeah.
No, sir. No.
There's no terrifying character. So obviously dwarves don't ride anything. There's no there's no dwarf man on a dragon. So there's no terrifying character. Not good. You know, like it's good to have that ability to affect that. And obviously subsequent that sub point is terror causes big problems for dwarves because it's an attack dice modifier which they can't have. Basically, you cannot. You could suffer being flanked a bit. Depends what flanked you, and you might draw it out of attrition. But you definitely cannot take flanks and terror. You've lost.
Even terror is bad enough.
Yeah, just alone is.
Or flank, either or. Yeah, both together.
So you can mitigate that a bit with the anvil, and you've got.
But that can only cover two brigades. I think there's always going to be an exposed brigade.
And you can mitigate
brigade.
It, and it might not work. And you can mitigate it a bit with slayers. So, but this is how you lose with dwarves. That's how you beat them.
Okay.
So, we have to say tier list, don't we?
So what I would say is...
Ourselves into tier two, haven't we?
Tier two. I would say about this, that I think dwarves are tier two, and they're good, only under the comp system we're using, only with the rules changes we've made.
Yes, okay. Yeah, given.
So if I'm pulling forward my support, and I'm aiming all my attacks onto your slayers in the middle... They could probably go down to tier three because I don't know how you're winning games.
I think they would be tier three without our Saffron Warden Errata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably the army where the Errata's made the biggest difference playing within a game.
Yeah, because cavalry are king, dwarves don't have cavalry, and this is, so.
Fight to front stops you targeting the stuff in the middle.
Picking on things, support first before combat's taken away.
Taken.
All of these rules help dwarves.
Yeah, so I think they made a few lists for dwarves to try and correct the problems.
Yeah.
And I think rather than rebuilding four different lists, I think if you try and play it with this Errata that we've talked about,
Dwarf army list that we're talking about here is the generic dwarf army list that represents the modern dwarves in the game. Like, there are fan lists. There's a Slayer list, a Engineers Guild list, and a Younger Holds list.
Yeah, yeah, three extra.
Which I don't think personally really need to be in it. Because of what we just said.
Yeah, and you can build most of it from here.
Yeah.
Most of it.
Like there are other units in the Old Hammer, like there's Iron Breakers, that kind of thing, Hammerers. You could represent them with a magical banner on a Dwarf Warrior unit, like Banner of Shielding for Iron Breakers.
Yeah.
There are Crossbow Dwarves, but are they really different from Handgunners? They would be, there's no difference, really. Yeah. So... What is here in the Old Hammer list is either in small enough numbers that it wouldn't really be in War Master, or you can represent it. I mean, GW made... let's go on, why would you play dwarves? I'll come into that.
So why would we play dwarves, Paul?
Okay, well, you got they've got good fluff. They're a seminal race. Under our system, they're much more playable.
That's definitely true.
Dwarf models are lovely. You can...
I remember what it was now.
Oh, God.
So... The problems that are still remaining for dwarves are problems with the game, not with dwarves.
Yes. Yeah.
So, cavalry in the game are very, very good. It may be that heavy-hitting cavalry with lots of armour are too good for the game system.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know how you deal with that. And also...
Because in Warmaster Ancients, there isn't much heavy cavalry, true heavy cavalry. And where it is, you can only have two rounds of combat in... War Master Ancients.
And then it stops.
And then it stops.
So there's no pursue, and then yeah. So I'm sure, I haven't played Ancients, but I'm sure that's what they've tried to fix with that.
I mean, Ancients came after War Master, and I think Rick styled it as perhaps a prototype of War Master version 2. That is the big difference with War Master Ancients. But, I mean, in War Master Ancients, you don't have the fantasy of fantasy.
Yeah, and the second issue that dwarves suffer from, but it's a game issue, is flanking.
Yeah.
If you get flanked, for want of a better word, you're getting bummed. You're finished. It's gone. It doesn't matter what you are. You can be Tomb Kings, you can be dwarves, it doesn't matter. You're finished. There's no support. You're reducing the number of attacks. It's over. Mm-hmm. And that isn't a problem in itself, because in the real world, if you get flanked, you're going to get destroyed. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The problem is...
Very medieval tactics of that get flanking was everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, for certain armies, due to leadership problems and stuff, you get flanked.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to get flanked.
Yeah.
Like a high elf, they move 30 centimetres into your flank, and then in on an eye, you're flanked. What are you going to do? They've moved like 60 centimetres, maybe.
Yeah.
You can't protect all this flank. It's a 6x4 table, and you're taking up maybe...
You need to look for scenery and depth, and defence in depth. It's where, is in the tactics against it.
Okay, so you have your three brigades plus your artillery brigade. Basically, and I was always looking for flanks. I wasn't looking to go in the front ever.
An army analogy for flanking in Warmaster. If you set up a defended position and a strategic location and you dig into it, you dig in trenches, so you've fixed your trenches down and they can't turn, can you? You can't suddenly return the trench.
They can't turn the trench, not very quickly.
Once you've dug it 8 feet down, which I've done in Sorcery Plane, they're fixed. And to sit now, you kill people in a trench by flanking them. Because they can all shoot to the front, but one man can shoot to the side.
Yeah.
Because it's the nature.
And the missile... the machine guns are aiming forward.
The nature of a trench is everything's set up to go forward. Now, you defend that position by defence in depth. So, like, castle formations, you have the lead trenches are there, and the enfilading trenches are set not directly behind, but to the side of it. So their fire will kill the enemy that tries to come in onto the side of that front trench.
Yeah, but we don't have that kind of warfare.
No, I'm just saying. But
But that's relying on weight of arms, shooting people.
So in Warmaster, your lead unit, if you're going to get flanked, you're going to have something that will hurt the flankers after that's done.
But they're not there.
But they will be somewhere.
They'll be somewhere
close,
near.
Somewhere close.
Yeah, but imagine we have like 4 rounds of combat and then they get to reform. They could be 20 centimetres away.
Well, yeah, they could, I mean, that's where you've got Command 10 General pushing your stuff forward.
Flanking is very hard in this game.
It's not easy. I mean, like Skaven, who, for example, when we start to play Skaven, I start to play Skaven, I will have so much on the table that this whole flanking issue won't be as big a problem because I've got troops everywhere.
And we'll see.
And so we're talking about at SmogCon, maybe the way around like the issue of flanking is you start breaking up brigades. You start having smaller brigades.
Yeah.
Rather than clumping them all four together, why don't you break them all individually?
I mean, it's not a problem for me. I tend to be the one hitting the flank.
Yeah.
the one being hitting the flank. One thing I would say, just as a general game tactic, maybe we should have tactic of the week, is when you get somebody in the flank, don't go gung-ho and put like all your stands in. Just if you only need one stand or two stands, put in one stand and two support and kill them slowly. It's like dripping death on them.
A thousand cuts.
It's like something. Take 20 rounds to kill
him. You poke him in the
hurty bits, don't you? It's just a miserable thing for the opponent to roll, to get killed over 1,000 turns.
Yeah. But,
right, so why would you play dwarves? Why do you play dwarves, Paul?
But again, I like the fluff.
Were you doing this when I cut you off?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Okay.
The models are good. The models are sound. They're easy to paint. And you can use, obviously there's dwarfs in other companies, you can get hold of alternative dwarf art, dwarfs quite easily.
It was Eureka, wasn't it, the good crazy dwarfs?
Yes, they are much better in Warmaster than they are in Oldhammer. They are a better army. They're like, they're tier 2. They're not tier, like, nothing.
But I'm only promising they're tier 2 if you use these amendments. I'm not promising tier 2 if they're not.
Exactly. I think you would play them because you've naturally drawn to them in a way. It's like, if I've never played anything before... Because the dwarves won't teach you everything about the game because you're not using some of it.
Yeah,
like so they're not a good army to begin with. They're an army
that's high elves.
That's high elves.
Yeah.
Dwarves are an army for an experienced player who is naturally stubborn and likes beer.
And doesn't smile a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, right, we've got one thing that's not on our sheet to talk about. You've been spending money again, Paul.
I have. So, in our last podcast, which I'm just pulling up the
notes. If you send him a link, he will spend money.
I will.
Trust me, just don't listen to this Hannah, who's his wife.
So, it was to get some Empire miniatures sculpted by Bob Naismith from warmongerminiatures.com, which I'm guessing is relatively new because it was a Kickstarter not so long ago. Anyway, I ordered some pikemen and some greatswords, and they look fantastic. I got to say, they fit right in with the Empire list. They might as well have be in the same like same series of models.
Yeah.
The pikemen look fantastic. They've got pikes which look to be about 18 feet long into scale, and the greatswords are like greatswords. So if you were playing an Empire list and you wanted, say, you could use the pikemen as alternative halberdiers, the same with the greatswords. But what this allows you to do also is that it allows you to do a unit of a Dogs of War army easier, because Dogs of War have a unit of pikemen, you know, in their list, which you have to, you know, which you're going to want to have, and these are the perfect models for it.
So I think they've got maybe four sets of strips for the great swords, and then even six with the that's a very nice flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're kind of based like in Warmaster the shooting,
missile troops.
Yeah, missile troops. So
because in pikemen form up the wrong way round in Warmaster, they form up like cavalry. So they will look really nice when they're formed up, because your back ranks will be pikes high, while your front ranks will be pikes low, and that's how they'll look on the table.
Yeah, the pikemen got two faces forward, two faces sideways. That's superb. Looks really good.
Well, the great swords are obviously just your elite infantry.
But you base them up like
missiles. But also great swords. I read a good bit of fluff about great swords. You need a lot of space to wield a great sword. They're not close rank troops. They need a long.
Yeah.
They needed a lot of ground between them to like swing this. Like Scottish warriors with huge claymores didn't form up tight because they couldn't use their claymores. They need a lot of space to swing their swords around.
And as for quality of casting and stuff, they look decent enough. There's not too much flash.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They're $10 a unit, which is nothing. Just their postage to America, to England, was more than the models.
Typical amount. You might have got away without customs at least. And the pikes are really long. They look like they're not going to break. It looks like it's lead based, so they're going to be flexible, unlike the GW stuff, which is not lead based.
And they also do units of crossbowmen and units of handgunners. I didn't get them because obviously the Empire range has them covered already.
And so we've got four units at the moment.
At the moment, and he's doing more. It's like on the. It's a very simple website, but he is doing more. He's okay. I got these. So like I looked, and once I picked them up, I went and looked at the Dogs of War army list, and I was like, I could do a Dogs of War army list quite easily, and we're not needing many alternative models, and I think Eureka would sort you out for that anyway, or Pendragon. So very good. The building I ordered from Total Battle Miniatures hasn't arrived yet, so I'm guessing that I will talk about that when it does.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Cheers, Paul. Thanks for running out and getting that.
Well, it's clicking and getting that. I do like spending money.
You do like spending money. So we've got a future events to talk about. And we've got a guest coming to foreign people coming to our events.
So first of all, we've got the doubles event on the 30th of April. We need to talk about that, Barry, because we need to sort out what we're doing.
Well, if they're letting me use Nippon, I'm using Nippon.
I think they are, aren't they?
Well, I'm gonna try.
It's worth an email, but then we need to talk about that. Also, for my event, the next one, Bunker War Master 2, looks like some Belgians are turning up.
That's superb.
So I've had some emails, and actually I emailed them back saying offering my house if they need accommodation, actually. So,
did you speak to Hannah first?
No. I just did. By mentioning this
I'm not
podcast.
Sure she listens. Well done, Hannah. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you for saying yes to that, Hannah. We have a spare room.
Brilliant. They can bring some Abbey beer or something over from Belgium's wife.
But I'm more than happy to do that. There's a common connection, basically. They know, I don't know how they know Rodders, but they know Rodders, and that's how they've gotten hold of it. The guy, and there's certainly one, maybe two, maybe more.
Okay, happy days. So, I think that's it for now. So, if you want to contact us for feedback, you can leave a message at the Facebook page, warmaster.podcast, or you can go to warmaster.com. podcast@googlemail.com. Drop us an email. We will listen to the... We will read the emails, and we do.
Yes.
As Paul proves here, we're not only does he read them, he spends money on them. So if you're a manufacturer, send him some links, and he'll spend some money.
Yeah, I'm hoping, actually, the whole spending some money for manufacturers is when I come round to asking for price support again for Bunker War Master 2. Example, the Polar Fox Russian guy was like... when I explained to him what I was after, he was like, I don't know if anyone buys my stuff. Well, now they have done.
That's true.
Because Dave Ricketts drops a whole ton of money on a whole army. And I will, like, when I ask him for sponsorship again, I'll be like, it's worth your while because you've made money from helping us last time. Yeah, if you help us more, it might make more money.
Okay. It's good price support. Mm-hmm. We don't need anything else, just some price support for your events.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that I've got the trophy and everything bought already, I don't have to buy that again. So, price support might even be better this
Happy
time.
Happy days. Right? Yeah. So, that's it. That was War Master Podcast Episode 10. Dwarves, little legs, big guns.
Little legs, big guns. What are we doing next time?
I don't know.
I think we should tick off the Seminole races before we do the alternative
two
races.
Two Kings or something then, I
guess. We've done them.
Oh, well, no, it won't be two pins then. The wall was else on the
Vampire
list.
Counts.
Oh, it was Vampire Counts. That was the one I was thinking of. Okay. So that was episode 10 with Paul and Barry.
Thanks so much for listening.
Okay, good night.
Oh.